Finance for Future, the podcast of the Mindful Finance Institute, moderated by Friedhelm Boschert and Clemens Höppner.
We already have recorded another episode with Isabel Rimanotti, who did a lot of research and work on the sustainability mindset. And the first episode was on the sustainability mindset itself and the 12 sustainability mindset principles that Isabel in her work discovered.
Yeah, and in the second episode, we were much more focused on the business and the finance sphere. Is there any special issue to deal with the mindset? Are there special conditions to deal with the mindset? Is there any special meaning of the inner transformation towards the transformation of structure and processes? This is questions, Clemens, both of us were dealing with when we talked to corporates and to business leaders. And I think this is what we want to explore in the second part of our podcast.
And Isabel has some really interesting answers, as well as questions on that topic.
I'm enjoying both. Enjoy. Yeah, I think we now finished the first part of our podcast, and we are now switching to a part where Clemens and myself are working with mainly. This is the financial sector and the corporate sector, of course. And so there are some specifics about the mindset we would like to talk to you about. Clemens.
Yeah, as you said, a major part of our work is with leaders in the corporate sector and financial services. And Isabel, you have been working as well with leaders in the corporate sector, right?
Yes, I have been working indirectly where they are participants of executive education programs.
And in your research, you interviewed.
Oh, yes, in the research. That's where it started. Yeah.
Yeah. And from what you have seen, how well can executives really work on changing their mindset? And how do the leaders and their organizations benefit from that if an executive moves to this sustainability mindset? What is in there for the leaders and for the organizations?
Yeah, I think we can think of this from different perspectives. If you think of this from a business perspective, you will say, can you afford not to have a sustainability mindset? Because by now, everybody knows that I have to do something in sustainability, right? I may not have to need a mindset. I don't even know what it is. But we may be implementing small things that qualify. Now, if you want to gain some competitive advantage, are you an early adopter or are you just lagging behind and trying to catch up with what the market is demanding, what your competitors are doing, or what consumers or community are requesting. So then you need to go a step deeper, because it is no longer about how can I fix this and how can I fix that. Now we are looking at the side of the iceberg that is below, as I was saying. So if you want to have some strategic thinking, you better understand what are the values and the assumptions that you're making. And then there's another point. How well are you listening to the feedback of reality, right? Because don't you want to be with your finger on the pulse of reality? What is reality telling you? That's the feedback you receive. Okay, so now you open the newspaper again and tell me what is reality telling you about how we are operating, because we may have this beautiful thoughts about, oh, what we're doing really doesn't have consequences. Okay, so now you have to think again, because their consequences are already hitting in the face. Now, from the business perspective, it's a no-brainer. Really, it can hit you if you're not paying attention to how you're doing things, not only that you will not be a leader in your industry, or you will not be shaping policy, but you are giving away that privilege, that opportunity, and just sitting in the back and saying, let me see when it is really hot, then we run out of this house. So it depends how you see yourself. And then there are all these liabilities, and more, you know, as there is more awareness of the consequences of the intentional, unintentional consequences, because it's not that all these business people are mean. No, we all have all good intentions. We just have compartmentalized our behaviors and the consequence. Now that this is becoming more obvious, now insurance companies are looking closer to what is it that you're doing. And not just how you treat your facilities, what you do with your wastewater, what you do with the community, what you do with your workers. Now the scope of caring is expanding, and so the indirect accountability of an organization. And then I think there is a wonderful thing happening that is the virtuous cycle. And we all know the vicious cycle. Right. And so if everybody's doing bad, why shouldn't I do it? And so we all do more bad. Now, it's a new phenomenon emerging, which is the virtuous cycle. Well, if your competitors are doing something that is really good, now you say, oh, my God, now I look bad just by not doing it. And it's not mandatory and there's no regulation, but just by not doing it, it makes me look awful. So now we have this social pressure that is coming, and we have pressures coming from many different sides. And I think it is not just about reacting. I mean, you can be reactive, but then that the consequence is that you will be always late. You missed the opportunity to lead and shape. You're probably familiar with these different levels of sustainability. The level zero, the ground zero, is just not to be fined. Oh, make everything that is comply, because you don't want to fine or go to trial. But then the next level is, oh, where are there some cost savings? So maybe we not only get, oh, we can do something and be good for the planet and save some money. And the next level is, how can we develop a product that is cool and that people like and that is sustainable? The next one, how can we make this our strategy? And the highest level is, how can we influence our industry? How can we influence others' policy? Now we are the leading edge. We don't have to wait that some other colleagues come and say, this is what has to be done. And, oh, how are we going to do it? Takes us 5 years to adapt. So these are 5 years that we lost. So, but these things, when you address them from the mindset, it makes it so much easier, because now you're already sitting in this universe that makes sense through this glass. That is how you're seeing. This is a lens through which you will analyze reality. So it comes more automatically. You don't have to say, okay, how are we going to do it and why? Now you already see it, because this is the lens through which you will look at reality. And you cannot help but seeing like that. This morning in this call, there were professors from Indonesia and Germany and Brazil, and well, they were from different countries. And one of the questions was, how lasting is the impact once we develop a mindset? Is it something that has a high after the course and then it goes and then it vanishes? And so we were discussing this. And one of the reflections was that if we do a good work developing these different angles of the mindset, as I was saying, the ecological worldview, the systems perspective, the emotional intelligence, I can share a little bit what that is. It's very specific, and spiritual intelligence. So if we are approached from these different angles, then the result is more encompassing. So now I ask you, how can you avoid that acting out of your worldview? You cannot. We have been doing it all our life in a terrible way, but we couldn't, because we were not aware of it. In the moment that changes, we cannot help but acting out of that. But it has to be, you know, a little encompassing. It's not just to say, okay, we will do a walk in nature and that's it. No, you really have to pay attention to the different aspects. No, each one, it's important in itself, but it's a little bit more complex than that.
Totally agreed. Just a quick comment, Friedhelm, before you go on. Isabel, how well are you listening to the feedback of reality? You said that at the beginning of this last part, and I really like that. Because this is a big part about how well are we listening to the feedback of reality.
Yeah, that's right. I think this is leads us to this the question of myself. When we discuss and when we come to business leaders, we often come to these stages what you described from the product, from the cost saving to the product to the strategy, and then suddenly the world stops. Yeah. So now talking about the mindset seems something sometimes a bit strange and a bit odd. But for us, it's there's an additional reason for that, because we think it is an essential fundament for corporate culture, for a sustainable culture, to live within something. So now this relationship mindset on the one side and the culture of an organization or of a corporate. Do you have any experience with that? Is it the same, or is it are there any transformation requirements or differences or what else?
Well, I think I like to deconstruct culture, because like the mindset is a complex concept, right? Mm-hmm. So what is culture? First, you have a lot of people, individuals, and then we know, what if we have an opportunity to help them explore what is their mindset? Huh? So we have individuals going through that process. Then you have structures. How are these structures supporting one narrative or the other? And that is when people start to feel a little bit uncomfortable. Let's say you're in a workshop and you're exploring values and mindset and purpose and all these things. And suddenly people say, well, you know, but in this organization, we get rewarded by A, B, and C, and not by M and F. Okay. And so what's the next step? Are you a leader? How do you step now into your understanding? What do you do with it? What does this disconnect tell you? Are you listening to reality? Can you maintain a structure that rewards ABC when you are seeing that reality or the engagement of the people is going into MNF or the community? So that is not up to you as an external to come and mandate it, but it sort of evolves from inside. What are the processes that we need to start shaping to make it more consistent? And engagement is another very challenging situation. You know that they say that 18% of the employees are actually positively engaged. These statistics are frightening, no? And then you have 54% that are actively disengaged. So how do you work on this? And so much of the disengagement is because, well, you know, I have to live my real life or my values or my heart or my beliefs, everything outside, and just come to work. And you have a lot of cynicism. So I think individuals are a very powerful lever for change. Easier than to start with the structure. You start with the structure and you say, okay, now we have to abide by this. One more thing to do. Well, if you start with the inner transformation, then the external is pushed with a different force.
Otherwise, the inner condition may resist the structural changes as well.
Or people leave.
Right. Yeah.
I had a student, she was working in a very, very famous and big company in the US, based in the US, but they do a lot of diamonds and jewelry and stones. And when we started the course, she said, I will work on this project. I will work because we do a lot of mining and things. And after some time, she said, you know, my boss said, I cannot do that project. And now I'm wondering, why can I not do that project? What is there? I was so proud of my company. And why did they forbid me to work on that project? So that created such a tension that over the months of this course, at the end, she said, you know, I'm quitting. I just cannot live with a company where I cannot connect with the values. And you find this a lot in the younger generation. Mm-hmm. They're very value-based. So she said, and all my friends were saying, are you crazy? You have a wonderful career. You have a six-figure earning there and you're leaving it? She said, no, it's not my values. Now, 10 years later, I read in the news that other company is taking sustainability very serious and are expanding and now they're talking about it. But well, sometimes it takes losing wonderful resources, wonderful people that just cannot live with that. That's another loss.
Thank you.
Sounds like she was ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, she was, yeah. But you she may also have pointed a direction.
No? Yeah.
Because as I say, these are not bad people. This was not mafiosos. This was a wonderful company and a lovely board that they had and ethical people. And so they were confronted with, oh my God, is this what we're doing?
Yeah. And sometimes it takes a bit longer.
Yeah.
You have three principles in there that are very close to what we already have been doing at the Mindful Finance Institute and how we have been doing it for years now. Reflection, self-awareness, and mindfulness, actually, is one of the principles. Mm. And you just talked about emotional intelligence as well. How can these contribute to saving us humans and planet Earth?
Saving us humans.
Or saving us humans on planet Earth, actually.
I think we have to be so careful with the words we choose because we never know how this can land. You know, for example, when I talk about spiritual intelligence, I always have to quickly explain this is not a religious thing. We're talking about oneness with nature. We are talking about understanding how we connect with each other, what is important, what are our values, you know, what is the difference we want to make, so that we don't get defensiveness and people not hearing anymore because we touched something like save the humans or save the planet, save the waves. Mm-hmm. I think paying attention to the language is very important because we all come with the language that we are used to and we can speak the same language like German, English, but that doesn't mean that we are talking about the same things. So yes, these are three very important aspects. I don't know how you have used reflection. One of the interesting things or avenues to get into reflection is noticing what is your pace, because I think we are all trapped in a pace, and because it's like the movement of the earth. Oh, you know, we go 4,000 kilometers an hour a day that we're turning and we don't feel it. If we would be in a car, we would all be like this back, but we speed in the universe at that speed, and because we all do it, we don't notice it. So what is our personal pace? And I say that because when we live very in a very accelerated pace, just because everybody is like this, we don't notice it. But when we are in this accelerated pace, we are more drawn by what has to be done and by when, so that we can do it fast. And if we can multitask, even better, so we get more things done because our to-do list is just endless. Where is the pause that we need to just sit back and say, wait a moment, why are we doing this anyway? What was our goal? What is the purpose of this? Because that, if we don't do that, we lose the link between what we are doing and the consequences, the impact, the bigger reason why, how it connects with our values. And we go into this reactive, automatic work, automatic pace. And so reflection, to me, a nice way, well, obviously, we say we have to reflect. Oh, yes, everybody has to reflect. I think every day, yes. But it's a different type of reflecting when we say, actually, can we pause? Can we pause for 60 seconds and stay in silence and just notice, oh, wait a moment, that's uncomfortable in a group. So how do we notice our own pace? I give you an example. There is an exercise that I did. Do I have time to share a story?
Yeah.
Okay. So one day I was teaching in New York, and there was this activity that I invited participants to do to go into a coffee shop and stay 45 minutes without the phone and without anything to write. It's not the time to do writing or journaling or anything. Just go without your phone and just sit there and do nothing. And that is the assignment, to be there and do nothing. what a stupid assignment. So after a little bit resistance, but they didn't have a choice because I am the authority, so they had to do it. And so they went, and then when they came back, they wrote their thoughts, their experience. And so there was this woman who said, well, I went to the coffee shop where I go every day. So I ordered my coffee, and then I found the table. I said, okay, let me sit down. And then I said, so now what? Okay, yes, I have to sit there. So I started to think all the things that I had to do at home, at the office, and that I was not doing, and all the things. And then I said, no, but I am. It's okay that I'm here because that is my assignment. I'm supposed to be doing nothing. Oh, doing nothing. Yeah, okay. Oh, I cannot check at my phone because I left my phone in the office. So that's odd. So then she said, oh, I bet it's already like half an hour. So she asked someone, what time is it? And then they tell the time, saying, oh my God, only 10 minutes. And I have to be here 45. What will I be doing 45 minutes? This is ridiculous. And so she said, okay, smells good. Well, I never noticed that there's this good smell here, the coffee smell. Oh, that's so nice. What is music? Well, it's music. Interesting. I come here every day. I never notice there is music. Oh. And then she starts watching people. What are other people doing? And here comes in this guy and goes to the place the order. And he comes looking at his phone. And he continues looking at his phone while he places the order and orders his coffee and continues looking at his phone. And she said, this guy never put down the phone to look at the barista. And she said, oh, that's me. And it was a mirror where she suddenly saw herself. And she said, oh, my God, how I don't notice the music. I don't notice. I miss the smells. I miss looking at the barista. Now that I'm looking at the baristas, I see they're smiling. There are people there. So that little experience was a way for her to notice what was her pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very easy to do activity, actually. Mm-hmm. It's like a big logistics. No? You can do it anywhere, but it's a very profound experience where we get to know our pace. And that, I think, is a good gateway to understand what we mean by reflection. Because if we think of reflection intellectually, oh, yes, I reflect. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're thinking beings. Oh, cogito ergo sum. No, that's not about it. Mm-hmm. It's about noticing the pace in which we go from action to action to action to action without pondering. So what if, and what about this, and how does this connect with who I am or who I want to be?
This is true for the sustainability activism and movement as well. Sometimes we observe a kind of activism there. We have to reduce CO2 now immediately. We have to introduce the electric car immediately now. We have to do this. We have to take an action. We have to demonstrate. And so there is an activism. Sometimes we observe that. Do you think? We are convinced that even on this side, apart from our daily accelerated life, even in the sustainability activities, we should, be a bit more reflected, have more silent moments, and assignments like you mentioned, which I think is not a stupid one.
You know, Friedhelm, I think what you're just saying, you are giving an example. You're describing what this. Two columns is. I operate a lot with a matrix that has an internal and an external column. Just think of a matrix, external, internal.
Mm-hmm.
External focus of sustainability are all these actions. Mm-hmm. Whether you take them individually or in a group, collectively, these are the visible parts mm-hmm. of the mindset. What are you doing? The left column, the internal, is the lower part of the iceberg. Are the values, the assumptions, the paradigm in which we are caught. And so when we operate in this internal column, we get more substantial, better foundation for the actions on the right side. And a lot of sustainability campaigns and are on this right side, and we need it. Definitely, that's why we're doing it. We need it. But how well is it grounded in a mindset shift? Because until we don't shift that mindset, we are sort of the in a part working with an engine that turns to the left, and then we want to act in the right, and there is an inconsistency. So that creates the crux.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things we thought about as well preparing this podcast was that leadership is actually still often held by older generations, by older people, which just is without judgment. And you mentioned neuroplasticity already. Thinking about the mindset shift that is needed and how a lot of people, and I mean myself when I was younger, my movement was different than it is now. And I'm in my late 40s now. So can older people, the older generations, still change their mindsets and develop a sustainability mindset?
I think they can. I think we need to pay a lot of attention where everybody is standing in their own journey and honor that. Because as I said before, no one is intentionally doing the things in the wrong way. Yeah. They're doing the best they can with what they have, with the tools they have, with the awareness they have. Now, once we start expanding awareness and touch the higher self that we are, the better self, the better angels of ourselves, that they're very, very powerful things can happen. And I will give you a little domestic example. So my sister had a faucet leaking in her bathroom. So she told her husband, can you please fix that leak? And he said, yeah, yes, yes. And a day and two and three and four and five went by, and she said it a few times, and then she didn't want to be so insistent. And then over the weekend, they had a sleepover with their grandson, who is four. So when the grandson goes to the bathroom, he said, oh, you're harming the planet here. You know what? Next morning, that was at night. Next morning, her husband got up and said, you know what? Today we will fix it. We will do it together. And she couldn't believe it. And I say, you know, what is the power that we all individuals have? And when I hear people say, oh, you know, we have to transform the politicians. What can I do? I'm just a student. I'm just a worker. I'm just a consultant. I'm just this. I'm just that. Just a professor. Everybody say, I'm just this. I cannot. What is my influence? And actually, I think our area of influence is huge. We have an untapped power there that we just don't realize. Whether you're a consumer, a father, whatever, a four-year-old.
Yeah.
He went on and said, oh, you're having a plan. Imagine the power that had. The wife didn't have that power. The four-year-old. And why was that? Because he touched his heart. He came from a tender side. You know, it was not you have to do this and this and this. It came from a side, you know, it touched my heart. He's such a cute kid and I love it and he loves me. And so, how can I be hurting his planet? It will not be my planet. Mm-hmm. So let's do it. So how can we tap into this wonderful, fertile area that we all carry, which is the loving part, it is the caring part, it's the higher, the better self that we all want to be. As opposed to say, okay, let me see what you're doing wrong. No, we will go and build on what are the things that you really care about. How do you want to do more of that? What is in the way? What are some opportunities that you have with your influence, with your areas you control, with your decisions? And that is empowering. That is bringing the best out of a person. We all want to be our best. We just don't know how to be a little bit better. Definitely not going through the numbers. That's enough. There, you know, when I was doing this, my first research, I heard over and over stories of personal profound transformation because of something that had happened at a personal level. They connected with what, who am I? Who do I want to be? What am I doing? Etc. etc. And then these leaders said, well, then the next challenge is, how do I make the business case? Because now that I have seen it, I need mm-hmm. to convert that into a business case because I need to bring it to the executive team, to the other leaders. And I kept thinking, it was not the business case that transformed you. Why are you assuming that everybody else, you will convince them with a rationale, you're the only one that was had this aha moment because of something that was different. Mm-hmm. And that is this untapped reservoir that we have there. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to tap into that. Mm-hmm. Very easy. We all carry it.
Well, you are quite optimistic about the individual transformation to tap into these untapped resources. Are you optimistic about the society or all of the world's population as well, that we manage, let's say, in time to change the world?
I do think so. You know, if you would have asked me this question, and I'm happy we didn't 5 or 6 years ago, I would not have been so comfortable answering because I didn't have that hope. But a few things changed. One of the big milestones for me was the presentation of the SDGs. When I heard the SDGs, I said, this time, maybe we get our act together, because it was the first time that we had a very concrete mapping. What are all the things that are wrong? And let's set goals and very concrete targets, 167, just in case you're wondering. Very concrete. And there is something for everybody. I'm yet to meet a person that says, well, the SDGs don't touch what I'm doing. Really, it touches the 8 billion that we are on the planet. Everybody can do something. Not only that we are enduring it, everybody can do something. So when I saw that, I said, okay, maybe now that we have clear what we want to achieve, because it's not just about fixing what is wrong. You also want to achieve this better world. You want to live better, more healthy, more flourishing, more that, that, that. So that was the first. Then the second moment where I said, oh, that's interesting, is with the children's movement, with Greta Thunberg and all the movements that came after that, because that created now a pressure from below. Now we have these children at home, in the bathroom, they're talking to us and changing our priorities and making us do things. And it's not only the Gretas, but also the siblings are the Gretas. They say, well, you know what my sister is doing, and she is in the fifth grade, look what she's doing. And so now that is changing. I've never thought of that. I'm a teenager, or I'm in college. So that is influencing a whole context, and it is like a guerrilla, you know, it goes everywhere. It's not clustered. It's not a movement with one person leading. It is decentralized. So that gives a lot of pressure from below. Then what I noticed working with students is that they immediately get it. I mean, if they are 20, 30, it doesn't matter. They immediately get it. They may not have the words for it, and they may be caught, like the parents are, in a paradigm. But once you start to point out and talk and have conversations, you say, yeah, of course. Oh, how can we not think of that? So this becomes obvious for them, right? It just takes very little. We are just giving them language that they can put words and start to communicate and think out of this new paradigm. You don't have to unlearn them anything. They immediately resonate with that. Now, my generation, yeah, that's where the problem is. This is the one that has to develop a new mindset. This is the hard work, right? The educators and that. But these younger people, now, in 10 years, what will be the average age of the employees? What will you have? People that now they are 10 or they're 15. This is a different world. They come with another logic. And I think that is very powerful, because we're talking about 10 years. That is massive change. So you have the youngers coming up, Then you have the area of influence, which is their siblings, their families, their parents. Oh, my God, yes, maybe I should. Then you have the media showing what is going here and there. Oh, my God, look what is happening there. Horror stories and good stories. That is all streamed. Educating is bombarding is from all sides, just shaping information, information, information. Then you have this deeper movement where we are questioning with things like happened like COVID. Wait a moment, now we're all at home. What do I do with my time? How do I manage? What am I, where am I commuting? So we get these shocks where we suddenly connect more with our values. And I think this is a blessing. Everything is like the zeitgeist. It's coming together. Mm-hmm. For I don't think it is by chance that we are hearing the word mind shift, mindset change in so many different places. I was at this conference last week. 1,800 people signed up for the mind shift conference. And there were maybe 10 educators. Mostly come from different areas. Coaches, consultants, very interested. This is happening. How can this not create a tipping point? I think we are already there. We are already in the transition towards the tipping point.
You know, Friedhelm, what I really liked in this interview was how clear Isabel was on that implementing a sustainability mindset really is a competitive advantage for companies, and that it's really important for strategic thinking. Because strategic thinking always builds on our assumptions and mental models we are using. And if we don't use the right assumptions and the right mental models, then our planning, our strategic thinking goes off. And this question that she posed, I thought was wonderful. How well are you listening to the feedback of reality? And how much people haven't we listened to the feedback of reality and are we still not listening? That I think is a really, really good question.
I think for me, it was in addition to that, it was quite a striking feature of that her perspective towards the successful conditions of the transformation within. So not only strategic competitive advantage, but what makes a transformation within the company successful. And so when she talked about connecting minds and hearts, connect to your emotions, connect with each other. And I think this was quite an aspect which is often neglected. And she was really very clear about that.
So that we don't act from just thinking, that we have to bring emotions and that we have to bring feeling in. She also already stressed that in the first episode, because thinking just gets us stuck in thinking.
Yeah, I think it's quite essential for her approach to mindset shift.
So we hope that you enjoyed our podcast interview with Isabel as much as we did. And as well, always feel free to send us comments, ideas, questions, or suggestions who we should interview in the future. Have a great time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Finance for Future, the podcast of the Mindful Finance Institute. Moderated by Friedhelm Boschert and Clemens Höppner.